Whether it's a blog post, creating content, writing a book, or building a business, one of the toughest parts of any of that is just getting started. That's why I really enjoyed my conversation with Robbie Swale, the author of How to Start When You're Stuck. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of Marketing Unboxed. Welcome to another episode of Marketing Unboxed. Today, I'm joined by Robbie Swale, and this is part of the author series. He is the author of How to Start When You're Stuck, and a common problem for a lot of people. So thanks for coming on the show today.
Oh, Travis, thanks for having me. It's a total pleasure to be here.
So I read the book, loved it, and it actually helped me. So I used to write every day. I wrote a book as well. It was a habit. And it helped me think. I loved it. And then went on vacation last year for the first time in a year and a half after the pandemic was allegedly over, and just kind of got out of my routine. It was a pandemic routine that I started and got out of it. And then actually, I think I sat down and started to read your book, and I didn't even get out of the about this book section, and it made me want to start again. You talk about 12 minutes, right? Writing in 12-minute blocks is how you were doing it. I tried 12 minutes, and next thing I know, it lasted for 30. And 700 words later, I had my first blog post in months. So yeah, thank you for being the catalyst to that. And love to hear why'd you write the book? What was the genesis of that?
Yeah, well, first, thanks for sharing that story, because one of the things I realized when I was about to launch the book, I remembered that I should remember the lessons that people who have mentored me have taught me. And one of those is a guy called Robert Holden, who's a British psychologist, but he's very active over in the US as well. And one of the pieces of his work is to ask yourself, really focus on asking yourself what success is, and then to ask yourself the more difficult question, and what is real success? And obviously success for me for the book when I was first answering that question was a lot about selling books and what that might lead on to and that kind of thing. And then the real success question was interesting, because I realized that real success for me for this book and this work is about inspiring people to start things that they wish they were doing and for some reason aren't. And that's what I'd got interested in. And so success for me is hearing stories like the one you've just told. So I'm really conscious, since I had that thought, of how meaningful that is, that you've written 700 words, perhaps because inspired by something I made. So thank you for telling me that story.
Yeah, absolutely. Now I'm on a 2-week streak. So
amazing.
Last week I sat down and read your book, and I found that I couldn't read it and not feel guilty about not doing it, right? Like, I know I should, and now this is kind of the push,
especially,
right?
Because you'd had that habit before. Mm-hmm. And I think in that my mind is a bit garbled with that book at the moment, Travis, because I'm working on the second one. Mm-hmm. Like, I've just submitted the manuscript for that. So if this isn't in the book that you've read, it's in the second one that's about to come out. But there's this piece that, like, you know, the procrastination, the not doing things, it can't cope with discipline. And the times when habits slip are, like, one of the times is when something like holiday happens, mm-hmm. or with the gym or exercise, it's when you get an injury, you know, and you can't train for a week or two. You think you'll get back to it, and then you just don't quite. And suddenly you realize months or years have passed. And very glad to be the reminder that for you of that habit having slipped. And then, love the, you know, guilt is a great way to realize what we wish we were doing or how we wish we'd been.
Exactly.
And so glad that you got back into that habit. The genesis of the book, to actually answer your question instead of going off on a
no, that was great.
Little tangent. The genesis of the book is in some ways, you know, the whole point of the book. It, essentially, for various reasons, including that I'd been struggling with posting things online at all, but also that I kind of knew I wanted to write more. I found it hard to say that to myself. Like, I had lots of other, but underneath, when I look back, I know that's what was going on. Like, I envied the people who had written lots of blog articles and kind of wished that I was doing that. I wasn't really saying that to myself or the coach I was working with at the time. I was saying other things, but looking back, it feels obvious that that was the case. Like I wanted to be writing more. And the way that my coach helped me do that in the end was to create, this 12-minute writing practice, which was to get through all my procrastination and all my worries about sharing things online was actually on my train journey at the time, short train journey. It was right while the train's moving, stop when the train stops, proofread it once and post it on LinkedIn because I thought no one really read LinkedIn, which I think was more true when this happened. It was like 2016.
Yeah.
I think LinkedIn is more of a blogging platform than it was then. And it was important to do it where no one would really read it because I was really scared of what people would think about what I'd made. Like I knew that I wanted it to be public in some way. Like I kind of knew that, but I didn't want to put it on Facebook where all my friends were. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I think even in 2016, Facebook was a bit of a meaner place than, obviously it's not Twitter, but it's a bit of a meaner place than LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And so I did that. And we did that. I did that five times in the first couple of weeks. Cause that was the kind of challenge that we'd set me. And after those 2 weeks, I went on holiday actually. And then luckily, like rather than just letting that thing go, I had it in mind because it was quite an intense experience to post these blogs online, just written in this short train journey, proofread once. And I kind of had the sense that there was something important about that for me. So I committed at that point to doing one post a week from then until Christmas. And that actually rolled on. I've been doing one pretty much every week, apart from the odd time I'm on holiday and a couple of other times since then. So we're on like, what's that, 5.5 years. And at some point in that, the 12 minutes emerged because I stopped getting the train as much. I was transitioning my career to being fully working for myself. And at some point, that was became mostly online. I wasn't going into the middle of London, which is where I live. And I realized that the train journey one day, when I checked it, I was like, how long is that? And it was about 12 minutes. And so I started setting a timer for 12 minutes, right when the timer's going, stop when it stops, proofread it once, post it online. And then about 3 years into that practice, and a bit inspired by Seth Godin's work, you know, who I know you really appreciate that as well. He posted a big book that was a compilation of a load of his blog. And I had this thought, it was kind of a thought that, well, I could put my blog into a book. And it was actually partly inspired by this insight I'd had, which is like sometimes I have this habit of not doing something for kind of reasons that are sometimes good and sometimes procrastination, but that in the end get in the way of the people who might really want to engage with my work from engaging with it. So for example, I didn't have a mailing list for a while because I thought like, well, it's kind of procrastination, me setting up a mailing list, because what I should really be doing is building my business. Mm-hmm. Like, and my business is a coaching business, so it's all built through conversation. But it was a bit like that with the book. At first I was thinking, why would I make a book of this? And then I realized it was actually quite hard for people who want to read my blog. I had 3 years of it by that point to read it, because it's all on LinkedIn, which albeit is a good platform for sharing things, it's not really a good platform for finding 3 years worth of weekly blog posts.
Yeah.
And exactly. At first the book was just going to be, it was just going to be a compilation of those blog posts that would make it easier for like the few very enthusiastic followers of my blog, you know, including my close family, to read all my blog if they wanted to. And that's kind of a good reason to publish a book, you know, to a certain extent. And I thought, well, it'd be funny because I could call it, I wrote this book in 12 minutes, you know, and that would be a bit provoking. And then I talked to my friend Steve, who was going to help me copy edit that book, you know, just a compilation. And he said, well, can we make the book itself about the same thing that title challenges people on, which is basically you can write a book by just setting aside 12 minutes a week. That's what I did. Like you don't, you know, you reader don't really have an excuse for not getting on with your thing, whatever it is. And it turned out what was really interesting is that because I'd been writing in this way where I just kind of wrote about whatever I was interested in that week, because that's all I had time for in 12 minutes. And what I'd been interested in was why we struggle to do the things we want to do sometimes. Like that's where the practice had come from for me. That's the work I was doing with my clients. Because I'd been writing about what I was interested in and interested in that, I actually did have a book about the creative process, about why we procrastinate and about how to kind of break through that. In the end, it felt like it was too big and unwieldy a book as it was. And so it's going to be a series of four books, the first one of which is that one that you held up. The next one hopefully will come out. Well, the next three I'm planning to get out this year. That's my ambitious target. Nice. And in some ways, that was the kind of magical thing about it. that I'd accidentally written a book about something. And it was something that I was really interested in, which is this thing, this kind of creative process, but creativity in the broader sense of like, why do we not do the things we want to do sometimes? And when I thought about that, I realized that's something I really care about. It's something that means a lot to me. Something I've seen, I felt how horrible and difficult that can be sometimes. And I've seen it like wrap other people in knots as well. And so not only was it the book I'd accidentally written, but when I sat down and really thought about it, it felt like a really meaningful book for me. And it's very exciting that it's out. And it's so, you know, it's still a real trip for me to see you on the other side of the world holding up a copy of it, having read it. So it's absolutely, yeah, it's still lovely to be in that phase too.
Yeah. Yeah, that is the weird thing, right? Because I wrote a book and published it in December of 2020, and it almost doesn't feel real, right? It doesn't feel real that someone can go buy it on Amazon and have it on the other side of the world, right?
It's amazing.
And then I get my Amazon emails reports every month, and I see the different countries that where someone has bought my book, and it's just like, whoa, wow, that's crazy. But yeah, you know, 12 minutes a day. Like I had said, I tried to do that and ended up going well beyond 12 minutes. And, you know, just think about what you could do if you did 12 minutes every day instead of per week, right? Like, and that's how I wrote my book, but I think it was 30. I tried to block off like 30 minutes every day is going to be the minimum that I write for this book. And I got it done in 6 months. And the editing took probably 2 of the 6. But if you just put your mind to it and just block it off. And if you think about it in the scheme of things, 12 minutes a week, nothing, right? I mean, think of the things you do for longer than that, that are completely meaningless, right?
It's terrifying to do that, yeah. Travis, though, so think about all those things.
Don't think about those things, right?
But you're absolutely right. And I love, like, one of the funny things that I realized in publishing the book, I looked up the train journey times from Clapham Junction, where I live, to London Waterloo, which is that train journey I was writing on. And the train almost never lasts 12 minutes. Mm-hmm. It just happened to on the one that I checked. I love that because it shows how arbitrary that 12 minutes really is. And what I've just like, it's just started happening a few months in. I've started getting, you know, messages from people who have written a blog post using that 12 minute method, but they're all making it their own in the way that you've just talked about it. It's like, yeah, 12 minutes. Like almost no one can't find 12 minutes in a week to do something, but 12 minutes won't be the right amount of time for everyone, especially with something like writing. It happens to have been a really good, and we could, you know, I can kind of think these days about why that might be a really good amount of time for me. But yeah, the great thing is once you get started, sometimes the rhythm will be longer for other people, but also sometimes when you get started like you, like then everything starts flowing and 12 minutes becomes 30, or when you were doing your book, I imagine sometimes 30 became 60.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. Like, and I sometimes think about that, you know, I've done 12 minutes a week for 5.5 years, and that's definitely not as like, I'm definitely less productive than I would have been if I'd done 12 minutes a day for that whole time. And I'm not sure I would have. So like the 4 books are about 4 different stages of the creative process. And the first one is start, right? If you don't start your project or your business or your book or whatever it is, it won't exist. Like everything has to be started. The second book is about keeping going because like in some ways that's the next, if you want to do great work, those are the 2 most important conditions, start and keep doing it. And in thinking about that more, as I'm pulling together from those 3 years of that blog, the first 3 years of it that are about keeping going, one of the things that's become really apparent to me is there's something that's changed for me. I've never had a habit that I've kept to for 5.5 years before, like never in my life. I can't think of anything else like that. And once I've done that, I noticed that I've become someone different. Like I've become someone now who knows, has the embodied knowledge that I am someone who can stick to a habit for 5.5 years. And in a way, that makes kind of anything possible. If I choose to do something now, every week for 5.5 years, then like, you know, if I did it for 50 years, you know, I get a PhD in the end. I don't know how long that would take in 12 minutes a week, right? But it's like, you can do big things like that. These days, as I'm thinking about it, 12 minutes a day is better than 12 minutes a week, as long as you keep it going for long enough. But there's a kind of tortoise hare thing that I've spotted, which you know, there are people who had written loads more blog posts when I started my blog than me. Like a guy that I follow his blog, he'd written 100. And I remember him writing a post about lessons from his first 100 blog posts. And I've now written more than him because he hasn't been writing consistently over those last, let's say, 4 years. I don't know what it is. So because that's fresh in my mind when you were saying that about 12 minutes, like I think one of the reasons it's been so powerful for me is that it is something that I can keep going under almost any circumstance, where the daily thing, it has that slight, maybe slightly less resilience to it because the habit gets broken. This is a key insight for me. Like one of the things about habits is in a way, the key moments, why keeping going is so important. The key moment in any habit is what happens when you don't do it.
Exactly.
Do you give up at that point or when you realize you haven't done it, or do you recommit again to doing it? And that feels like, you know, that's was vital in my writing practice. I have a gratitude practice that I do speech marks every night, except I don't. And I notice my gratitude book sometimes and I think, oh no, I haven't done this since like last Friday. What am I going to do? Am I going to catch it up or am I going to give up? And like so far, the decision has always been, I'm going to catch it up. I'm going to keep going. But what you do in those moments with habits, that's absolutely vital.
Yeah. I mean, keeping streaks alive, a daily streak is so hard. And when I was writing every day, it started to morph into like, I had started to kind of lose my reason, my why. The why all of a sudden became the streak and not the things that I really enjoyed about it, which were writing daily. It helped me think about things differently, observe things throughout my day differently. I would go to bed and not know what I was going to write about and wake up and it was crystal clear. Like, this is exactly what I'm going to write about because I'd been processing it while I was sleeping. It was the weirdest thing. And I just knew that it would happen and it did. But, you know, when I went on vacation and the streak broke, since it had morphed into being about the streak and not about the writing, the streak was done. Okay. I guess it's, you know, it was really hard to get back into it. And it's something that I'm aware of now, and I'm trying to change the way I think about it. And interestingly, I'm practicing this because I think it's practice. The way you approach streaks and consistency, I think it's practice. And I'm practicing on my Peloton as I'm riding it. I had a goal that I was going to try to ride it every day that I could. And this was in December. And I'm like, well, why do I need to wait until some arbitrary date of January 1st? I'll just start today. So that was like December 23rd that I started that streak. But then I knew, okay, things are happening. We're coming out of this pandemic, allegedly. I actually have trips planned. I went to the Super Bowl in January or February. 2 weeks later, went to a gala for a nonprofit that I work with. Going to, you know, just have these trips planned. I knew that it was going to break, right? So I think part of it is understanding that and making it about more than the streak, understanding your why, and giving yourself some grace to know that just because you miss a day, miss a few days, it's not over. And so on my Peloton, I did like the entire month of January, all 31 days. Then I got to the Super Bowl and that streak was broken, but I'm like, that's all right because I'll come back. The Peloton's still going to be there. I can just hop back on, keep doing my thing. And so understanding that just because it broke doesn't mean that it's done. And I was, my streak is there because I want to stay healthy. I have two young kids and another on the way, and I want to be able to be active with them for a very, very long time. And that's why I do it. And so understanding the why is not my streak. It's because consistency, and it doesn't matter if I do it every day or four times a week, it's still going to help me get to where I want to be, right? Maintain. And so that's something that I've just been practicing so that when I get back into writing, it's not about the streak anymore, right? And a weekly is a better cadence because I think to give yourself some grace, you also have to give yourself a buffer to live life. Life is going to happen.
So much in what you just said, Travis, I agree with it all. I just love hearing about how you're, it's like using the way that a streak or a challenge like that helps, but not like you said, if we're not careful, we lose sight of what it's supposed to be helping us with.
Exactly.
And if we do that, yeah, like I love what you said, like if the streak is the only thing, then as soon as the streak is broken, the thing is done. And I think that's, you know, it's a bit like, you know, I found that that's something I learned from my writing practice on LinkedIn, right? If it's all about how many clicks and likes I get, then on the one that I give a slightly rubbish title, so hardly anyone clicks on it, or the one that's just not very good, because if you write a post every week for 5 years, some of them aren't very good. On those ones, not many people like them or comment. If it's only about the likes and clicks, then I failed at that point and it feels empty. But if I know it's about the practice, it's about me learning and growing, it's about developing my confidence, all those things, like, and like you say, the way that having a writing practice changes how we think and seems to affect, yeah, all kinds of things. I love that story about how you woke up with ideas with crystal clear in your mind. When it's about all those things, it's about the process, it's about what we're doing and practicing, then for me, the whole thing is, yeah, much more sustainable.
Mm. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And to dive into your book, one thing that I found very interesting is you talked about taking action and asking for help. So I want to talk about that too. And a lot of these things that, even though I'm not writing, I'm building a business and I'm dealing with a lot of this stuff now of feeling like I'm on my own, asking for help. So in August, I left my full-time role as a director of marketing, relatively safe, secure role to start a business and consulting. And I've noticed, and I've been thinking about this a lot lately, that when I describe it to people and the way I phrase it is that I've decided to go out on my own. And as I've thought about it, it's like, I'm not really on my own, even though it's just me right now. I do have partners that I pull in for different projects. I have mentors. So really, I'm not out on my own, which would be a terrifying thing. And so I don't think that's really true. And we're not really, and you probably find this in your coaching and in your business, that we're not really on our own, are we? At least if we want to be successful. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a wrestle for me. It's been an interesting journey. Like, to me, there was something important about like the independence that having my own business gave me, and being able to make the choices that are right for me and follow the, you know, there's a chapter in the book about the one line business plan. And essentially mine was follow the feeling, which is like an intuitive feeling that I had that I hadn't had in my work. And I'd been kind of following that out. So I loved that. And you're right, though, it is a choice. And it's really important that we remember that when we go SpeechMarks out on our own. But it's been a learning journey for me. One of the Robert Holden, who I mentioned before, one of the lessons that I really took from working with him last year, there's a thing he says, which is the next level of success always requires a new level of collaboration. And that a lot of us, you know, we need to be independent, but then we slip into what Robert calls dysfunctional independence. And as soon as I had been given that frame by him, I could see, you know, how through the phases of my business, I'd been in a phase where I said yes to everything and was creating partnerships. And of course, what's interesting, because this book was written in between 5 and 2 years ago, that's it. A lot of that is present in the book. And as you say that now, and I'm thinking of Robert, I'm realizing that I then made some different choices in the kind of couple of years after that. And now I'm coming back to that point where, yeah, I'm needing to see the benefits of not being out there on my own. And I think one of the amazing things, it's a bit like seeing someone on the other side of the world holding up my book, you know, and we're able to have this conversation across thousands and thousands of miles. You know, that's an amazing part of the modern world, that we absolutely don't need to be out on our own. We can find the communities that matter. And in a way, that's how we ended up speaking. And we can build partnerships and find people to work with us. And the book is a great example of that. Mm. So it's funny to write a book about creative projects and how to get them out and why we struggle with them, because the book in itself is one of those projects. And I kept finding myself stuck in that as part of the process. You know, it took 2 years between first having the idea, more than 2 years between having the idea of publishing the book and the first of them actually coming out. And a big part of getting them out was building some new partnerships with people who could help me with that. And I think there's something that they seem to have in common for me about us making something happen. Us could mean an individual, it could mean a group of people making something happen that wouldn't otherwise happen. And I think there are kind of, especially with books maybe, And to a certain extent, with the stories, the kind of mythology that we have around entrepreneurialism, there is this kind of story of the lone genius. And I wonder if that's a thing that holds us back a lot. You know, we think that the best way of writing a book is to sit in a room for, you know, 5 years and slave over the typewriter. Or we think that a business is best if we kind of go away into our garage, come up with a great idea, build it, and then take it to market with an absolute bang. But actually, probably the great businesses, the great books that are written in the incredibly connected age we live in, they're almost always going to be in some way formed by those kind of amazing collaborations that weren't possible before, because there's so much possibility in them. And that's something that I was definitely learning as I was writing the book, you know, that when we have a partnership, new things become possible that weren't possible when it was just us. And I guess it's lovely to be having this conversation now and you to be picking that out, because it's, you know, I think in some ways, I heard someone else say this, I can't remember who it was. You might know if you do, we can give that person credit. It's like, in some ways, we write the book that we need. And that's definitely true of this one. But I'd never seen this bit of it until that moment. Like, it's like I'm back round wrestling with partnerships again, which I probably was when I was writing the first parts of this book. And then I wasn't for a while. And now I am. And I think that's been a part of my growth, certainly. I think a part of the growth is done. And then a few years later, or months, sometimes days later, it comes back and smacks me in the face.
Yeah. I mean, as you were talking about partnerships and writing your book, it made me think that, you know, as I wrote mine, it was part of a workshop and we were supposed to write it and edit it ourselves, or kind of edit it in the community that I wrote it in. And I think at that point I realized editing sucks, at least for me. I could write, but the editing part, that's where I got bogged down. And that almost made me push out my shipping date to, you know, we were supposed to do it as part of an Akimbo workshop, writing in community. And we were starting in June and we were supposed to publish it on Kindle by December 20th. And November, I was thinking, there's no way. I'm not going to be able to do it. I'm going to have to push it out. Maybe February I'll do it. And then I got on a call with everybody in the workshop, and Seth was kind of leading it. And he said something that he said, you know what, if you're thinking about not shipping it on the 20th, then rethink that, basically, because if you don't ship it on the 20th, you may never ship it, because you're trying to make it perfect and it'll never be perfect. And even if you have typos, just ship it. And that made me feel, again, guilty, back to that guilty piece of, well, yeah, that's what I was thinking. And yeah, probably would never ship it if I waited, because there's always, you can always move the goalposts, right? So I went out and got an editor and just decided I would need to find someone that could do this better than me so that we can get this done and it can ship by the 20th. So I did, and that changed a ton. And so when I write another book, I'm going to start with this editor and bring her into the fold early. And I think that's the thing about partnerships, is like you had mentioned, that it kind of opens up the range of possibility. And I think the ideal partnerships are made when you can find someone who has strengths different than your own, and yours are different than theirs. And together you can create something that neither one of you could have done without the other. And I'm thinking about that a lot right now. And that leads me to another part of your book that I think you had mentioned, that sometimes we're awful at understanding time and we underestimate how much we can get done in a year or more, and we overestimate what we can get done in a day. And I experience that every day. And you also mentioned that sometimes we don't start because something feels too big. I've actually been thinking of the opposite lately with my business, is that what if we're thinking too small, and that's a box that's closing us in, and that we're not thinking big enough. And I feel like I've been putting myself in this imaginary box for the last 6 months, and I've just started to think I'm not thinking big enough. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think we're ingenious, aren't we, Travis, at kind of holding ourselves back. Like, that's in some ways what the book is about. So one of the things that I had going on in my head is, like, you know, because the book in essence is a collection of essays. That's exactly how it was written, over a period of 3 years, and then handpicked and ordered carefully and edited to make them fit together. But it is still a handful of essays. And part of me was worried, you know, like, but aren't real books aren't written like this. Real books, people sit down and they have a 10 years of research or a PhD, or they're a professor at Harvard, and they then take the all of that research and they put it into a book, and it's written carefully from start to finish with an editor on board, and this isn't a real book. And that, you know, if I hadn't been so aware of how ingenious we are at stopping ourselves from doing things that are scary for us, that might have stopped me with the book. But when I dug into that and tried to tell myself, you know, well, what are the other stories that could be true about how you write a book? One of the things I realized is what I'm writing about in these books is about how we're ingenious at stopping ourselves and how we can get around that. Creativity is a complex process. And so there are, like, it's okay for things to be contradictory. It's okay for there not to be a clear narrative, because different people at different times will struggle with different things as part of that process of making something that counts or growing as a human or whatever it is that their business or their book or their creative project are doing. And so I've definitely seen people get hamstrung by that thing about underestimating and overestimating what can be achieved. And I've definitely seen people be kind of frightened off by the scale of an idea. Like, it'll take me, I'll never, you know, the story is usually in extremes. It's like, I'll never become the kind of business person that could create that big thing that I'd love to create. And, you know, the kind of lesson of the 12 minutes is, well, that might be true, but probably it's not. Probably in, like, you know, anyone could become, with enough 12 minutes is, whether that's 12 minutes a day or whatever, anyone could become the PhD expert in something. Anyone could become fluent in a language if you put in enough time and create the conditions. And I've seen people be held back by that thing that you're talking about, by not dreaming big enough. Mm. You know, I think there's a real time and space for that kind of magic wand thinking. What's the absolutely impossible goal for your business? Mm. What's the thing that could happen with your business this year? Like, you know, I sometimes ask coaching clients, it's like, imagine we're having a conversation in a year's time or 5 years time. And you have to, this, I stole this from my old coach, Rich Litvin, who gets some name checks in the book. You know, mm-hmm. he would say, we're going to have this conversation in the future. And you have to start it with, holy shit, Rich, you're never going to believe what's happened. And that's the kind of level of how remarkably things have turned out. And it's really powerful to do that because we think we see the world as it is, but there's that great quote that I think Stephen Covey made popular. We don't, we see it as we are. And there's some, as I understand it, there's neuroscience behind that. It's like the reason that if you're expecting a baby at the moment, and I know this because we had a baby a year and a half ago, when you're expecting a baby, you see pregnant women everywhere. Like, maybe in COVID it was that there were more pregnant women, but mostly it's not. Mostly it's just that your brain filters for what it thinks is important at the moment. Mm. And in some ways, it filters for what it thinks is possible. And if you start to do the magical thinking, then suddenly you start to see those opportunities. I remember one of my other coaches, Joel, who actually was coaching me when we created the train writing practice. We were talking about this kind of thing and talking about writing a 5-year remarkable average day out from start to finish. It's a great exercise. You start from the moment you open your eyes and you write in as much detail as you can about what will be happening in your day if things have turned out remarkably. And he just had this idea about this kind of house he wanted to live in. And he didn't know where that idea came from, but he knew, but it felt like an extraordinary thing to move into this house. And then suddenly he started seeing those houses like everywhere he went in Amsterdam where he lives. And, you know, it's a really powerful thing. I'd really recommend it. You know, set yourself some time, play with possibility in those kind of, what's the impossible thing that I'd love to happen? What's the like crazy thing that could happen in 5 years? And just to know what those things are. And then, yeah, give yourself that challenge. What if you're not very good? And I think this is true of a lot of people, and it's true of me. What if you're not very good at understanding what's possible for you? Mm. If that's true, then what's, you know, what might you do?
Mm.
And I think those kinds of challenges are, yeah, definitely ones to play with in our thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things in the Alt MBA, another Akimbo workshop, you know, we got a couple books from that. One is The Art of Possibility. And I love that book. It's actually powered me through so much in the last couple of years, especially the chapter about everything's invented.
I mean, Travis, it's worth slowing down on that. It's like, if there were two books that had the biggest impact on my mindset, one would be The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, and one would be The Art of Possibility. And The War of Art is there, you know, is there because it's amazing for helping me realize lots of the things that we've been talking about, lots of the things that is very influential on the book, you know, and the, and those ideas. The Art of Possibility, though, is kind of almost on a bigger level, because it's really about that. It's about changing how we think, and it's all invented chapter. You know, the idea of it is that really, you know, they talk about how we don't even see, we think we see the world, but, you know, bees see things that we don't. That's one of the things I remember from it. And we invent all these rules for how the world works. And if you remember that, then it's in a lot of situations, it's quite quickly incredibly transformational. I really recommend that book. There's a great audiobook version of it as well, where the two authors read their own bits, and bits of it are about classical music and the, you know, Mahler's Ninth or whatever it is. I don't know if that's a thing for classical music experts. Probably there's only six Mahlers or something. But, you know, Mahler's Sixth comes in at the right moment just as they're talking about it, and that kind of thing. An amazing book.
Yeah. I've read it and listened to it. And I mean, it's changed the way I look at things, especially dealing with imposter syndrome. You know, it's helped me, especially since I started my business, the imposter syndrome kicked in strong. It could have like tanked me and really hurt my progress. But every time it started to creep in, I just remembered that everything's invented. All the stuff that I'm striving for in the industry where I live and work in marketing and sales, like, it's all invented. No one was ever born. I mean, maybe there's some skills that are innate about selling and marketing, but the technology that I use, HubSpot, like all the different things are invented, and no one was born knowing how to use HubSpot, right? So it's made me slow my roll, realize, hey, these people I'm comparing myself to figured this invented thing out a long time ago, and they were where I am now at some point. And that helped me get through and just say, okay, focus on today, focus on what I can learn today, one step at a time, and eventually I'll get there. Right.
And it's every, helped so much. Every book at some point had no pages, every blog, you know, if you've only written five blog posts, every blog at some point only had five blog posts, or at least the ones that made it to five. You know, some of them didn't even make it as far as you have when you've got five. And that does feel really important. It, you know, it's in near the start of the book. I think I heard it from Seth Godin first. He's very influential on me too. You know, it's the idea that the best time to plant an apple tree, this is a proverb, you know, perhaps an old Chinese one. I think that's what I heard Seth say. You know, the best time to plant an apple tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is now. And I really remember that. It's like, you know, if you want to be the successful person that you're comparing yourself to in 5 years' time, instead of where you are, well, that's great. As long as you're doing some of the things that will get you there, and, you know, make sure, like, how do you want to grow? Who do you want to be in the future? And what do you want? Like, what can you do for 12 minutes a week, you know, as the thought experiment, but it could be anything, you know, 12 minutes a month, 10 hours a month, one day a year. What can you do so that in 5 years' time, you of 5 years' time will thank you of now for starting the habit that you wish you'd had 5 years ago, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And in the War of Art, that book is fantastic too. I would highly recommend that to anyone. That was also in the box from Akimbo. We got just a box of books so delivered.
Because I don't think I learned about those books from Seth Godin.
Oh, really?
I think I was given the first Seth Godin book I read was The Icarus Deception, which is his book kind of about this same thing that we're talking about, getting ideas off the ground and breaking through our resistance and procrastination. An amazing book.
Yeah,
I think I was given that and The War of Art at the same time by my brother for Christmas one year. And the weird thing, Travis, is I then found another copy of The War of Art on my bookshelf.
Oh, really?
That I must have had from somebody else, and I couldn't, you know, get anyone to tell. No one would admit to having given it to me. But there's like, you know, that's how much I was resisting my creative battles. Like, I had to be given the book twice before I read it, and it made such an impact for me. But The Art of Possibility was given to me by somebody else. But I know that, you know, those two are a great combination to read for people who want to, you know, change who they are or change the impact they're having in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. And another book that was in there. And so if you think about The Art of Possibility, kind of blowing things up and how to do big things that you didn't think possible. Another book that was in that box was called Beautiful Constraint. And it's almost kind of the opposite, right? It's like, here's all this possibility, but here are these constraints. And it talked about how beneficial constraints can be because it forces you to be more creative. It forces you to think more critically if you can't do something because of something else. And I've been thinking in both of those terms lately because as I think about my business and I think about what a successful business would be to me, what how it would affect my life, and I compare myself to other people who have built businesses like mine, who might be agency, have built agencies and not just a consultancy, solopreneur consulting business. You know, I hate that the term hustle. I don't want to be a workaholic. I enjoy what I do, but I don't want it to take away from my family time, from living, right? I don't want to live to work. I want to work to live. And I think about how we've dealt with having a constraint of a 5-day work week. You know, why don't we work 7 days? We've got five. We find a way to get it done, right? And now more people are talking about a 4-day work week. And I'm starting to think about that of how can I build this business that grows over time, my income grows, all these things that I want to come out of the work I do, but yet increase the constraints. What if I only had 4 days to do it in? You know, what if I only had 5 hours a day for 4 days a week to do it in? How could And then I start to think, well, that's not possible. And man, the only way I can do this is just to get into the hustle lifestyle and just go down in the basement in my office and never come up for 4 days, you know, and I don't want to do that. But then I think it's possible. Why not? Right. It's just like you said in your book, you choose. You have to take responsibility for your life. And I think that's part of it is every day we're faced with decisions and I have decisions about who I take calls with, how I fill my day. Where are these hours? We get 24 hours. Everybody's got 24 hours, right? That's a constraint that everyone on the planet has. And yet some people are able to do a ton in those 24 hours. Some people are able to do a ton in 2 hours. So how do I engineer that to give me the successful business life that I envision without the other garbage that comes with that hustle culture that I don't want any part of. I want zero part of that. Just the people involved with that and the lifestyle don't want any of it. So I've been thinking about that a lot. How can I take possibility, but possibility within self-imposed constraints to then create something?
Yeah, but might be but impossible. It's great, isn't it? Because it does. That kind of thing does feel impossible and it's a great challenge to give yourself. And I love those kinds of challenges. It's like, what if, you know, yeah, what if there was a way for you to have that business that worked like that way in, I can't remember what you said, like 5 hours a day, 4 days a week, you know, how would that work? And then you have, then again, it's another way of thinking big. Mm-hmm. It's like, but it's thinking small. It's like, if that was to work, these things would have to happen. And I've been playing with that. So since our daughter was born, my end game has never been to work 5 days a week. Like I'm kind of with you. It's like, I want the balance in my life. And since I thought my daughter being born was a good time to try, okay, let's go to 4 days now. And you know, it's interesting because it's not obvious that my income has gone down. You know, it's hard to tell because it happened during the pandemic and lots of things have been changing in the world. And I've been working on the book instead of working on other things, but you know, but the constraints force me to be different. Like they, in a way, they force me to collaborate more in the way that we were talking about before. You know, I really believe in that about decisions and choice and responsibility. They force me to make better decisions. You know, if I'm going to do that in 4 days, it forces me to think differently about my scheduling again and about what I just let go of completely. And we have to think about all that. And, you know, I'm wrestling with it at a bit at the moment because I'm aware of the costs to me of that in different ways. Mm. But in a way, what you're talking about is better than that. Because what I'm talking about is I'll make the decision. I'll start doing 4 days a week and then I'll trust that something will happen. Mm. But if you can build the business from this kind of phase, thinking that's the end point, what needs to be in place? You know, where is the passive income coming in so that my time isn't like this? Those, you know, that's one of the things that I've been thinking about in the last few years, because a lot of my business is about me spending time with people. Mm. And the books are part of that in a way. It's like, in the long term, how is that sustainable for me if I want to keep creating things, if I want to keep having the time outside of work as well as the time for work? So I love that you're thinking about that now. I think that's super cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of dominating my thoughts over the past week and weeks. And yeah, I think that is part of that thinking, not thinking big enough, because I think when we are one person doing something, we think that we have to do it all and that we can't afford to hire someone to do these other things. But I've been guilty of that a lot. It's, you know, I'm just getting started. My revenue's not huge. In fact, it's probably a third of what I really want it to be to live comfortably where I was before. And so how can I afford to hire someone to do this stuff? But then you also think about how can I afford not to, because is my time, if I only have these constraints, right? And my time is very valuable now. And if I have to put my effort and leverage my skills and experience, should I be editing this podcast? No. And actually, I made the decision to hire someone. Hi, Ariel. She's going to be editing this. To hire someone to do that for me who's better at it than I am, right? Who's better at YouTube. I want to grow my YouTube channel. And that's something she's really good at. And so I made that decision. Okay, I need to hire someone because I need to have the interviews, not be spending the time on the editing. And the interviews are going to impact people that we're going to open conversations. I need to be a part of those conversations. And what they lead to, maybe the work it leads to, I don't necessarily need to be doing that work, but maybe leading it, managing it, project managing. That's where my skills and experience are better suited. And so if I can do that, and now I go out and spend my time where I am most effective of having the conversations, doing the content, booking the calls, talking to people, figuring out strategy, my business is going to grow a lot, right? Because now I'm not hamstrung by now having to be in the weeds doing the stuff that prevents me from doing the stuff that's going to grow the business. So yeah, that's what I've been thinking about a ton.
Yeah. And I think it is really important. Like it's like the ways that we sometimes get in the way of ourselves. Now, it could, like, the tricky thing is it's paradoxical. Like, it could be the right thing, starting a business, to be really tight with the money, to get into stuff yourself. If you're a person who's capable, like broadly capable of learning things, has practiced that a lot, then, you know, you might be the right person, the right time to learn how to do the podcast editing or whatever. But the thought experiment that I can't remember where it came from, it might have just been one that came out of me being coached just for myself. You know, it's one of the things I always think about with developing myself, right? I'm the tool, right? I'm the instrument in my business. And pretty much anyone who's an entrepreneur is that, but it's particularly true when my business is mostly me talking to people. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, that's really important. So me developing and growing and becoming more capable is like one of the, you know, most vital things in my business. But those doing that in the best ways can be really expensive. Mm. The thought experiment that I got through on that was, okay, well, how many extra clients ever would I need to be able to create as a result of doing this thing that I'm thinking of doing? Whether that's, you know, the marketing seminar with Akimbo or something different. The whole thing looks different when I play that thought experiment with myself. Mm. Instead of £10,000 or, you know, £500 or whatever it is, feeling expensive, suddenly in the long game, it doesn't feel like that at all. Mm. And I think it's the same with the books. With my podcast, I had to do that same thing that you did. It's like, this isn't sustainable unless I delegate some of this stuff. With the books, I was kind of more aware by the time I got to publishing the books. I was like, I could learn how to do all the publishing. Mm. But actually, I'm at a stage in my business now where I need to not be learning how to do everything. Mm. I need to be, you know, like Robert says, you know, collaborating in a new way in the next phase of my business. And like, if I'm spending loads of time editing my book or sorting the layout to go on Kindle, then I'm not spending time having this conversation with you, which is like, you know, is much more full of possibility for me in terms of, you know, us meeting and connecting, whoever might listen to this, all these ideas that are emerging in the space between us. Like, what a more rich thing for me to be doing personally, because of what my talents and interests and what brings me joy, like what a richer thing than me fiddling over the HTML type coding on Kindle.
Exactly. Know? Yeah, exactly. And that, you know, that'll sell some books, right? But there's somebody out there that can do it much quicker and better than you can. That'll sell more books, where this conversation will probably sell more books than that. Well, you know, so where can you get the biggest bang for your buck of time? And skills, right? So,
yeah,
cool. Well, yeah, I mean, I've got a ton of notes here that we could continue to go through, but I know we're close to time, over time, actually. Apologize for that, but great conversation. Really appreciate you coming on. And, you know, where can people connect with you and where can they buy your book?
No need to apologize about the time. Time's flown by for me. I could happily, you know, like I know when I'm having a great conversation because the time goes by and my energy goes up. So it's been an absolute pleasure to have this conversation with you. Thank you for creating the space and creating new insight for me and also giving me space to talk about some of the things that I care about the most. So thank you for all of that. It's been great to be here. People can find me at robbieswale.com. The book is, and the other books when they're out, will be on Amazon. They're also appearing in other places now as I, again, with the help of my partners on that, learn about the publishing world. So you might be able to, if people want to find the book somewhere else, they might be able to. I think it's on Barnes & Noble, for example, in the US. You find me on all the social medias, really. I'm probably most active still on LinkedIn, which is, you know, where the books were born, really. And I'm still, for the moment, I'm still using LinkedIn as a blogging platform as well as my website. But I'm also, yeah, that's where I'm most active in terms of social media. And if anyone listening happens to be a coach or be interested in coaching, I'm also at thecoachesjourney.com. That's my kind of like, I've kind of got two businesses, really. The bit that's just about me, which is the coaching and the books and that kind of thing. And then on the other side, for coaches, I've got that other business too, which is where my podcast is and that kind of thing. But yeah, and I'd love to hear, like, I absolutely loved that story you told about how the book had just prompted, via guilt or otherwise, you to get writing again. And I love hearing those stories. So if anyone ends up with a story like that, just from listening to this show or from having read the book, I'd love to hear that. It's very meaningful to me to hear about the impacts like that I'm making.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it worked right out of the gate. So
good.
So, and when does your next book come out? Do you have a date?
I mean, predictably, Travis, I'm slightly behind because that is, like you just described with the book workshop from Akimbo, classic. I was hoping that it would be the middle of April. I suspect it'll actually be May, but we'll see. Like my aim, I'm behind basically on getting the manuscript to the editor and that kind of thing, despite the fact that it was basically written in 2019. So I have really no excuses. It's obvious that it's all me. And I guess I say that because it's funny and also because, you know, it shows that one of the big lessons I learned from the War of Art was that everyone is suffering from this, from what Stephen Pressfield calls resistance. And I don't want to remotely pretend that just because I've written a book about being productive and habits and all that kind of thing, I don't suffer from all that stuff too. So May, it'll definitely be out, but I'm hoping April, if we can catch up a bit of that. But apparently the cover designer's got COVID now. So, you know, it's going to be slower for that. So, you know, the universe is also conspiring after I've wasted my time in the last month, the universe is now conspiring to show me up. But yeah, hopefully April, and it'll be called How to Keep Going When You Want to Give Up. And that'll be the second one. And then the third should be September and the fourth by the end of the year. That's the challenge that, awesome. That I've set myself.
Nice. Well, yeah, can't wait to read the next three. So I'll definitely be on your site. And do you share that through your newsletter and through the subscription?
Yeah, there's a mailing list there. There's the social media places too. There's various ways that you can be in touch with me and yeah, encourage people if they want to hear about the next books and that kind of thing. The mailing list via robbieswale.com is probably the good place to go. That's where I keep people updated about all the various many things that I end up getting up to.
Perfect. Well, yeah, thanks again. I really appreciate it. And yeah, looking forward to sharing this with the world.
Yeah, me too. Me too, Travis. Thanks so much.
And that wraps up this edition of Marketing Unboxed. Just want to thank you for listening and thank you for continuing to tune in. If you enjoyed the show, if you enjoy the podcast, please give it a rating, give it a review on Apple. I think you could do the same thing on Spotify. And if it's something you can do on any other platform, please do it. I really appreciate it and it just helps and get the word out. And until next time, I'm out.